You're listening to The Reverse Stick, the Global Hockey Podcast, and it's our pleasure to speak to on the show Stephen Finlater, because the EHL's about to kick off, and if you want to talk EHL, Stephen's the man to speak to. Greetings, Stephen.
How's it going, lads?
Fantastic, fantastic. Looking forward to round one in Barcelona this weekend. Are you getting over there yourself?
Yeah, flying out Thursday evening. So, yeah, I mean, I'm along at every single one of these EHL events, but it's, I suppose, as we mentioned probably before, the KO 16 in earlier this year, that my home club, Three Rock Rovers, are also playing in it. So I've got an extra busy weekend, not just promoting the EHL, but also trying to stick a few articles from my club into the newspapers and hopefully have something good to report about.
Now, there was some fantastic support last time around from the Three Rock Rovers crew. Are you expecting some good numbers to travel with you?
Hopefully, but I can't imagine that they'll travel in the same numbers as they did the last time around. Basically, we had a good boost that time around because we had about 120 kids from the club who got involved in a number of different tournaments over in Amsterdam at the time. So they were playing tournaments in Amsterdam and Rotterdam and then coming down and watching the matches themselves in the KO16. So we haven't been able to organise something similar along those lines. So it'd be a little bit quieter this time around. Also, the time of the year, it's kind of back to school time and all this, whereas Easter in Holland is a lot easier to get a big crowd out to them. So, I think it might be, there'll probably be quite a few hardcore elements of the club, but maybe not quite as big numbers.
Oh, the ultras.
Well,
maybe not.
Yeah, the Rovers ultras. Well, they do. The team from time to time does like to refer to themselves as the Galacticos. So maybe.
How very modest of them.
Yeah. Stephen, the EHL is probably the premier club competition in world hockey. It was a fantastic competition last year. What are you expecting this year? Is it going to be the same old faces, or are we going to see some rising talent coming through, some other clubs perhaps peaking up?
Yeah, I mean, last year was very much dominated by the Dutch sides. I mean, we had Kampong and Rotterdam and Bloemendaal, obviously the eventual champions, all making it through to the final four. So, I mean, the Dutch are very much the ones to beat, but anything can really happen when it comes to the knockout stages, including the draw, pitting a number of them against each other. So, I mean, we do have a number of different faces over the entirety of the 24 teams, with Rotterdam and Bloemendaal not qualifying again this year.
Whoa.
There were some suggestions in a couple of places that Bloemendaal should be allowed in because they won it last season, but it's not in the rules at this stage. And they didn't end up doing the business in their domestic league. They ended up finishing fourth overall, which I suppose is indicative of the quality of the Dutch league. So instead of them, we've got a fairly impressive Amsterdam side, and then the one that's going to be playing this weekend in round one in Barcelona, and that's Aranya Road. So they won it back about two or three years ago, 2015, when they were under the Aranya Zwart banner, but they've since amalgamated with the Eindhoven Hockey Club, and together they've formed one of the biggest clubs in Holland, and they're going to be a fairly formidable outfit. So they're heading up Pool A this time around. They're playing against SV Armenen and Grange from Scotland. I think you'd be hard pushed to look beyond Aranya Road for top spot in that group. Although Armenian did in that 2015 competition, they did meet Aranya Road and pushed them right the way to the end. It was 1-0 till about a minute from the end, and then there was a real collector's item of a goal from Mink van der Veerden, which was not from a penalty corner. He absolutely smashed it from open play to make it 2-0. But so there's a little bit of a rematch there, but you would expect a kind of a side packed with global superstars like Aranya Road to top that group.
And what about the other groups? Take us through them.
Yeah, okay. So we're looking at Pool B, is headed up by Mannheimer, the German side. They were champions of their domestic league 2 years ago. They've maybe slightly underperformed in the EHL in the last couple of seasons when they've been there. Last year they definitely should have gone a bit further than they did. They were 4-0 up. That's probably a 2-0 in current money. They got two field goals, which counted double last season, but we scrapped that rule. I think much to the happiness of everybody around. They were 4-0 up against Rotterdam, ended up drawing 4-4, and then lost in a shootout when they really should have gone through. I think they were 4-0 with about 6 minutes to go in that one. But, this time around, I mean, they have a couple of Olympic gold medalists in Lucas Villa and Gonzalo Payat still playing for them this season. They haven't been kind of drawn in by the Pro League just yet to take them away from club side, so they'll be very much central figures for them. And then they're a pretty good side, coached by Michael McCann, who's been there a number of years. Yeah. And is forging quite a good side. It's probably the best matchups in this group. They're playing against Wimbledon, who are they've won national titles for each of the last three seasons in England, and they've a number of the GB guys who were out there yesterday. Ian Sloan, Phil Roper, two of the co-captains with the national side under the last regime. So yeah, good lineup. And then Dinamo Elektrostal, Russian side, they were really, really good last year. They should have knocked out Uhlenhorst Mülheim, but they ended up contriving to concede a goal with about 3 minutes to go, which ended up knocking them out when they probably should have knocked out the German side, who went on to become the German champions. So they definitely can cause a few problems for everyone. And they also, it's a good time of the season for them as well, for the Russians. They're just coming to the end of their Russian domestic league campaign, which they are heading up ahead of Dinamo Kazan, whereas everyone else is obviously only about two or three weeks into their autumn season at the start of their campaign here in the Northern Hemisphere. So,
I was going to ask you that, Stephen. What's the early season form for sides like Mannheim and Wimbledon?
Yeah, decent enough. Wimbledon, I think they got they lost last weekend to Hampstead and Westminster, who'd be one of the challengers. So I think they've got one win from two so far. And then, but then they did this last season that they, I think they didn't win for the first five games last season and then managed to win the title outright, which is pretty bizarre going. Mannheim are there sitting second. They did miss a chance to go top of the table last weekend in Germany. They're sitting behind Rot-Weiß Cologne, who are pretty much one of the perennial challengers, in both the EHL and the German League. But Mannheim drew with Club Ander Alster 1-1 last weekend. In a bit of a scrappy game. I think Michael McCann wasn't particularly pleased with how they played. He was kind of looking for a bigger performance to lead into this weekend. But nonetheless, they'd still probably be the favourites on paper from that Pool B. But Wimbledon are a pretty tough side. They did reach the last four a couple of years ago, and they did also beat Mannheim the last time they met, which was on a shootout, a pretty nice one, as a big Phil Ball, who plays for a player, he's finished up with Wimbledon now, but he's one of these lads, he's big lads, he doesn't kind of you wouldn't see him I don't think at international level, but in the club game you see these kind of fairly robust, well-built fellas who still have all the skills, and he produced a pretty special shootout to win it for them.
And that leaves us with?
Oh, well, we've still got Pool C and Pool D to go. I suppose Pool C is probably on paper, the most clear-cut one you would have thought. Royal Leopold from Belgium. They were third in the Belgian Championships last year. They've got Manu Brunet from the Argentinian side in there, along with quite a few good Belgian players like Dorian Thierry and Dimitri Cuvelier. And guys like that. So they're pretty good lineup. They're playing against HC Minsk, who are the Belarusian, only the second Belarusian club to play in the EHL. They were only actually formed 10 years ago, so it's a pretty incredible rise for them. They've done quite well in the Euro Trophy events in the last couple of years, which got Belarus a ticket to the EHL, and they obviously took that up. So it's a bit big event for them so early in their career. I mean, I think they do have a couple of players who've played in the EHL before with Streutel Brest, which is the other Belarusian side, as well as Dinamo Kazan and Kolosik Voya, the Ukraine.
Congratulations.
So there you go. But like that, there's probably about 15 in their squad who've never played in the EHL before. So it's a pretty big step up for them. And they are playing the most experienced side in the EHL history, Grunwald Poznan, who are back for their 12th consecutive season. They just win the Polish league for fun. And they open their Polish season with a 14-0 win. I mean, maybe they need a bit more competition in their domestic league.
How many corners? How many corners from those 14 though? Because they rip a few, I think.
Yeah, I mean, so they do have the guy Thomas Dutkovic at the back. He's 37 now. He's played in every season of the EHL, along with six of the others. Well, sorry, we're only down to six of the players have played in each EHL competition. The
legends. Legends.
The goalkeeper Marius Chyla, he retired during the summer, reducing the number down from seven. They do have Artur Mikula up front, who did score a hat-trick in the 2000 Olympic Games. So that gives you an idea of some of the level of experience we're dealing with here.
Oh, he's older than my dad.
They're dominant in Poland, but you know, it's that they haven't had enough kind of younger players kind of coming in to replace the guys at the top end has been their issue. So I'd expect Leopold to win that one handily enough. And then it brings us on to Pool D, which is probably the best matched of all of them. I mean, it's probably a little biased on my behalf with Three Rock in there, but the home club, Junior FC, they're playing in their first EHL. They're pretty excited about it. They've been doing a huge amount of stuff with the local municipality, trying to get support behind it, getting local businesses, local fans, local kids involved. And, you know, that's kind of stuff we love to see on club hockey, you know, the kind of the grassroots getting galvanized and getting to see something up close and personal. So that's brilliant. They have had a kind of a fairly mixed start to the Spanish leagues since qualifying last year. They've got two wins, one draw, two losses. They did get the big one against Club Egara, who'd be one of the perennial, big dogs in the Spanish league that they'd knocked off their perch last year to get to the final. And they do have some serious big hitters in the side. Sergio Enrique, the Spanish, former Spanish captain, and Gabi Damaj, who won the EHL with Aranya Zwart in 2015 and has got, I think he's got about 21 EHL goals in his history, including seven in one game when he was playing for Leopold like three seasons ago. So,
and they've got a couple of imports in there as well?
Not especially, no. I mean, they've got from the other Spanish clubs that have been good in the past, like Oriol Malgoza is previously with Athletic Terrassa, Frank Di Mercurio from Club Egara. So they've got a few good players there, but it's like they're only promoted to the Spanish top division about five or six seasons ago, and it's a decent amount of it's been done kind of grassroots kind
Brilliant.
Of stuff. So guys like Mark Serahima and Mark Perrion, they've come through their system there, and that's been a key part of them there. Now Mark Perrion, as of Sunday, I think he picked up a cruciate knee ligament injury, so it's pretty devastating for him. He won't be able to play in this. Himself and Mark Serahima, they're kind of two of the big families in the club who do a lot of the organisation and things like that. So they're probably the guys that are looking to be the poster boys of all this. They're coming up against the Three Rock side who are, they had a fairly incredible season last year. They won six titles, two of them in indoors, won the National Indoor Trophy in Ireland, and then the European Club Challenge 2, which is the lowest tier of European indoor competition, but they still won it. And then they also won three cup titles in Ireland, as well as the Champions Trophy, which is the main event. Since then, Richard Potts has gone back to South Africa, where he's from originally. He had a good season with the club, and then their right back, Mark Samuel, has moved on. But, I mean, it's not none of their kind of key international players like Olympian Mitch Darling or Jamie Carr or Luke Madeley, these kind of guys, they've all stuck around for another season whilst pretty much half of Ireland seems to have moved to the Belgian or the German leagues during the summer. So they've managed to hold on to a good nucleus of the side. And so, you know, I think that the experience will stand to them of having done quite well in the KO 16 last year. Yeah, in terms of racing, they're very much looking at a much changed side this summer, and so that where they might have previously been maybe one of the contenders in this group, I think they're probably looking at it being as outsiders. So they've got injuries to Simon Martin Brizac and Jean-Laurent Kiefer, who are both two of the key men up front. And then in the summer, their goalkeeper, Corentin Saunier, he's moved to the Dutch leagues. And then another couple of guys like Antoine Ferrec have also gone to the Belgian league. So they're just missing just five or six of the key men from last year. And I think that's going to be the thing that stands against them.
Stephen, where can people catch up with the games? Are things available to view online?
Yeah, so for this one, it's all on EuroHockeyTV.org. who are going to have all the games. So yeah, you've got to get on there. All you have to do is register. All that requires is just your name and an email address, and we will send you the odd little poke to say that matches are coming up, but nothing too strenuous or scary from a GDPR perspective.
And so, what's the end game for the teams that are involved this weekend?
Yeah, so it's four groups of three, and then the winners of each group is going to go through to the KO 16. So that's the knockout rounds that I think most people are the most familiar with from the EHL, you know, where we get the big festival. This time around, it's going to be even bigger than normal. Basically, the tournament's gone. Has combined the KO 16 and the final four elements. So what we're, sorry, it's going to be a brilliant. Now I've lost my voice.
You're right. That's another edit for John.
Sorry.
To do.
28:45.
Yeah. So I'll go back and start at the the end game bit. Yeah, so it's four groups of three. The winner from each of them goes through to the KO 16, where they join the 12 big guns who've already got a bye through to the next round of the competition. The next round, the KO 16, it's going to be even bigger than normal, though. It's going to combine all the KO 16 matches. That's a knockout from 16 down to 8 and then down to 4. We're going to combine that with the final four of the competition. So it's going to be a week-long festival of hockey at Roundabout Easter next year from April 15th all the way through to the 21st. So that's it's a pretty exciting competition. It's obviously in line with the new international calendar, given that you know, there's a couple of less weekends available now with the Pro League coming in, and so this way we managed to get all the best players available for their clubs for this big event.
Regardless, Stephen, of arguments for and against calendar changes, etc., that'd be a fantastic week of hockey.
Oh yeah, like knockout hockey, there's not much better than it, you know, like you've got all the leagues in the world and all this kind of stuff, but like when you've got every single game being all or nothing, and you know, either kind of a, you know, win to go through or lose and you're dead in the competition, you know, it's absolutely you know, it's absolutely fantastic stuff. And then given that we've got so many good players and so many good clubs, kind of players who've been with these clubs all the way from the grassroots right the way through to the adult level and international competition, you know, it's just a really, really, you know, it's a real great festival. Also, we're going to be in the Netherlands once again for this KO 16 to Final Four. We haven't confirmed formally the venue, but it will be in the Netherlands once again, and they know how to throw a serious hockey party. So we're going to have all the big stands, the big crowds, and then all the other stuff that goes around it. You know, plenty of music and plenty of great atmosphere and plenty of side events with for the kid and things like that to enjoy. So, yeah, it's a pretty special competition, and one that I really hope maintains its prominence in the calendar.
Well, you mentioned calendar there. There's been some announcements this week from Euro Hockey and some changes to the calendar.
Yeah, thanks for that. Put me on the spot. I don't think I can itemize all of the different ones, but it has, I mean, with the changing nature of things, with the Pro League has kind of caused a bit of a shift in these kind of things. And so that to align with all of that, so that the Junior World Cup is going to, you sort of move to a different spot in the year and all that kind of stuff. They moved the European Under 21 Junior Championships and then, also the Under 18s and things like that, so that we maintain a proper pathway of competition all the way through to help all the people's developments and stuff like that. Also, a number of the club competitions have been moved around. They were initially, some of them due to be next April and some of them due to be next June, but due to the clashes with the international game for a lot of different teams and things like that, players being pulled left, right and centre to avoid those clashes, they've made the sensible move to kind of move the calendar around and accommodate everything, make sure that we get to all see the hockey players at the top end of the game in the best possible light.
Unfortunately, that won't be playing with their clubs, will it, necessarily?
Well, the hope is that the club game remains kind of a key part of hockey in Europe. You know, it's pretty much, you know, whilst it may not be in every single continent, it is in quite a few of them, that it does remain the bedrock of the you know, where we get our players from, the where people grow their love of the sport. I mean, we mentioned earlier in the thing about the Serahima family, about, you know, the kind of, they've got parents and stuff like that on the board of directors of the club who are setting up the youth systems and making sure that they're funded and well run to make sure that, you know, the kids come through those systems and, you know, maybe they'll reach the top level of the game and really love it, or else, you know, maybe they'll just be a social player or they'll be an umpire or something like that. Like, it is the natural, kind of breeding ground of hockey players worldwide, you know, to, in these kind of, and, yeah, I think it'd be sad to see if, it kind of, lose its prominence, you know? So, yeah, I'd like to think that the club would remain very much a central part of the International Hockey Federation's thinking, that and they do look to try and protect it and make sure they give it its head. And, you know, we've mentioned it a couple of times in the show before, but we would love to see, you know, an international club competition, you know, rather than moving the other way to making sure that this doesn't happen. I think, you know, something like that would be a great natural step forward.
I agree with you, Stephen. I was just wondering, you know, how the European clubs will, because no one knows how it's going to turn out, but are European clubs going to start to look at players from nations perhaps outside of those pro league teams? Because, you know, nations outside the top 10 or so nine, in the world, nine are still going to have players that are really, really good players.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, I mean, like, there's a few things that are already happening at this point. So the Belgian league is taking on a different format this year. They've gone to two groups of six that are playing out in, you know, and then from these different conferences, then they'll form a third group in the second half of the season. So, like, they've kind of done that to adapt. Now that they should have all their players available for all the games in the second half of the season and things like that. But, you know, those are the players that they've contracted at the start of the season that they'll have available. To that end, there's a huge amount of Irish guys that are now playing in the Belgian league this year. There's 20 of them have moved. Now, that's probably because Ireland are the, other than India, the best ranked side in the world who are not playing in the pro league.
Yeah.
And so as a result of that, obviously they're becoming more attractive to the pro clubs, because you're going to have them for the whole season rather than having them potentially, no, we don't know which way it's going to go, but potentially in the second half of the season, these guys moving on. Like, I mean, I mentioned Gonzalo Payet earlier in the thing. Like, you know, Mannheimer, you know, obviously they want to make sure that he plays as much for them as possible. But I mean, if he's traveling around the world with Argentina, it's going to be pretty tough for him to, you know, at the end of a long, hard pro league season, then to kind of come back and play a couple of games for them. And, it's something to, you know, from their own kind of player welfare kind of thing to think about, you know, if they're playing all these games week in, week out, so many different things. And I suppose, or vice versa, club, if they're being paid particularly well by a club and they're not getting money from the international side, that, you know, yeah, where do they, you know, do they end up going, look, I'm going to retire or not play in this international tournament? A bit like Chris Gayle in the cricket.
Exactly.
That they, you know, that they just choose the money route because, you know, they, you know, you're not going to make an absolute mint out of hockey, but, you might make enough to look after your family and your kids and things like that. So it's, you know, it's, there's plenty of decisions that have to be made from this perspective. And, there does feel like there's a bit of a tension between the two.
The other, I guess, the nice side on the Irish boys getting involved with the Belgian clubs is that they know that Pro League is a 4-year contract, so they can actually build up some long term relationships with these guys, and foster something which is good for club as well.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, it's one of these things as well from an Irish perspective. You know, I mean, it's kind of it's something that previous coaches have encouraged, because it's kind of outsourcing kind of high development kind of stuff. I mean, if they're based in Ireland, they would have to, you know, whilst they may get the good international coaching week in, week out, you know, what they do in between may not be always the best for their hockey, if you know what I mean. Like, the going to work at, you know, going to the gym at 6 a.m, then going to work for 8 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
And then come back to doing whatever session in the evening. This time, you know, they know that they'll be in a high performance environment, that they won't be snowed under with those kind of things. So, you know, from an Irish perspective, they they do realise that. I mean, from in terms of kind of the link ups with the Belgian clubs, I suppose, you know, you do find that it does depend very much on the different player. I mean, you've got Stephen Butler, who's probably one of the pioneers from an Irish perspective, who's gone over and, you know, become a real central figure in Dragons over in Belgium. He's gone on to be like a not quite a performance director, but kind of like involved in that realm in the club, and it's been a really big boost for them, and he's kind of continued to have that link then between Ireland and Belgium, bringing over Shane O'Donoghue and Kirk Shimmons, whereas other people, you know, might look at it a bit more, you know, utilitarian, and maybe, you know, just going, look, I'm going to get what I want out of this year, and then I'll be back in Ireland. So, I mean, it does depend on the players, but I suppose they definitely can plan in that kind of way that there will be opportunities for the next number of years.
Well, look, just whilst you're on Irish hockey, we're going to let you go in just a moment. I don't know if you heard the little clip from Enniscorthy Hockey Club a couple of weeks ago.
About
how well things are going. The vibe is still good there back at home.
I mean, it'll be interesting now the next couple of weeks. I mean, the National League's just kicked off last weekend, so I don't have any kind of attendance counts and things like that. But I mean, the vibe after the World Cup was incredible. Like, you know, it's one of these things. I work in newspapers over here, and normally you'd have it's like a circuit of kind of promotions of like, say, National Health Week or, you know, Breast Cancer Awareness or something like that, and you'd get a sports star along, and it would always be a soccer player, a rugby player, or a GA player, and then suddenly now we have all these Irish women's hockey players suddenly appearing, giving their two cents about these kind of things, and that's, you know, they've certainly become part of the mainstream, which is pretty cool to see. I think it's a, you know, so in whether it translates into more people picking up sticks now is the next step.
Well, we wish you all power with that. We wish you and the Three Rock Rovers all power at the weekend, and of course on the work side of things, we hope it all goes well. I'm sure it's going to be fantastic hockey. We'll be tuning in.
Oh, looking forward to another great EHL. It was fantastic last year.
Excellent stuff.
Thanks for joining us, Stephen. We'll speak soon.
No worries, talk to you soon.